and welcome to Upzoned, where every week we take just one story from the Strongtowns conversation and we upzone it. This is Kia. I'm here with Chuck, both of us reporting from within our respective polar vortices. How are you doing, Chuck? I know you've got like negative nothing degrees in Minnesota right now.
Doing fantastic. I actually had to have a car that I've been wanting to sell. We got a new car in December. For some reason, like everything aligned where today they wanted to come see it. And I woke up today, it was literally minus 37 below. And I said, there's no way this car is going to start. But guess what? I put a heater, like I opened up the hood, put a heater in there, wrapped it with blankets. And they came and we started it up. It actually worked. So, but yeah, it's
That's
brutal.
The most Minnesota thing I've ever heard in my life, like putting a blanket on your engine. Okay, cool. cool. We're doing pretty good in St. Louis here too. It's 6 degrees, which means that all things are closed and canceled. I grew up around your latitude, so I completely understand. And I'm kind of cursing everybody for being wimps and cursing my partner for having a day off from work. He's at the coffee shop.
It is kind of crazy. We have these different regional senses of what, you know, what is cold. Like I was in Florida last week and they were supposed to have this art thing around the lake and all these like 300 students, grade school students were going to come out and watch these artists work. And the principal called it off. And the quote was crazy. I mean, he sent a letter. It's like, our kids are not prepared for this degree of cold.
Emotionally.
It was in the 50s, like we, like, I know. And so, you know, you can be a little like, oh, sanctimonious, like, you know, well, we're so strong and tough. We did cancel school the last 2 days and tomorrow it's supposed to be in the 20 belows, like in the morning. And the school's going to be 2 hours late. There is a threshold even for us up north here where we like, yeah, it's too cold.
Definitely. Well, the story I picked out for us today actually touches this issue of how we as communities deal with emergencies and deal with kind of problems in general. I am being a little selfish today. I am upzoning a story about my city where I live, St. Louis, Missouri. Specifically, I live in St. Louis City, Missouri, which is different and has no relation to St. Louis County. This confuses the pants off of everyone I tell it to. But St. Louis City and County had a great divide back in, I believe, the 1800s, long, long time ago. And we have two completely separate governments. St. Louis City is not part of St. Louis County. But there has been an initiative for a long time, and now it's being formalized by a group that's trying to bring it to a statewide ballot to reincorporate St. Louis City into the county, to combine them and merge them, which raises some questions that we've tackled a little bit at Strongtowns about, can you make your city's financial problems go away or your county's financial problems go away by merging with a more affluent place that happens to be nearby and happens to have the same name? Is where you live. I just kind of wanted to hear your take on this. As a local, I am super embroiled in all of the gross political stuff attached to this. And I am curious from like the Strongtowns realm of pure ideas, how you react to this.
Well, I think the answer is no. It's so interesting because here in Minnesota, we have this thing called the Metropolitan Council. We've got this 7-county metropolitan area that's governed by this board. And it's looked at, especially in progressive circles, as this very kind of advanced, sophisticated regional governance. When I was in graduate school down in Minneapolis, not only was this held up as like a nationwide model, but it's also just kind of the idea that we should be doing this cooperative regional planning. Doesn't everybody want to get along and work together? And wouldn't that be great? It's held up as like the hallmark of what, as planners, we should be doing, almost religiously so. If two governments can come together and work together, that is so much better than the governments working independently. And if four can work together, that's like twice as good. Let me give you a couple examples of where this has happened, where I think it's just counterproductive. I'll give you two real quick. One, in the city of Memphis, there is a MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the regional body that decides where essentially federal gas tax dollars are going to be spent. And up until very recently, and it's not even changed that much, but if we went back a decade or more, this was comprised of, and I don't know exactly how many, but let's just say 7 different like regional governments. It might've been more than that. It might've been less. I don't know. But they each had, by the discretion of this board, the way it was set up, an equal vote. What this meant is that the city of Memphis, which represented like the core of the area, this huge population center, and by the way, one that is only getting transportation investments that make the city poorer and worse, they get one vote on a board that is also where these small little edge places and these edge counties and these edge suburbs get a vote. It's not surprising that you would have 6-1 votes all the time, where basically the money went to building a second beltway around the far outskirts of Memphis, something they not only absolutely didn't need, but can't afford. And you would starve the center core of funds, all in the name of regional planning and regional getting along. This is something I see over and over and over and over. Another just quick example. In Lafayette, Louisiana, where we did this extensive study with Joe Minicozzi's group at Urban 3, you had a city and a parish that were two, very much like your St. Louis situations, two separate entities. And the parish itself was just a financial disaster. They had built all of the kind of spread out housing developments. They had all these roads and very little tax base. And year after year after year, they would put together these budget documents that just said, you know, oh, everything's falling apart. Everything's terrible. And I mean, the front page of one of their budget documents was a guy standing there reading the budget document with an umbrella and lightning striking him. The next year was a guy, the front cover was a guy swimming in the ocean, and it said like parish finances, like written on his shirt. And then there was like a shark coming up to eat him while a wave was crashing on him. It was like, we're doomed. We're totally screwed. The next year they merge. So they went to the city and said, you know, you've coveted parish land for a long time. What if we just merged, come together, one big happy family, one big joint entity. The next year on the parish finance document, you had a picture of a handshake and like a bright sun shining up above. Now we all get along. Now it's all great. Of course, fast forward 10 years later, what have they done? The city's now a financial wreck. The city, you know, they didn't change anything about their development pattern. The city just inherited these massive, massive problems in the name of working together. I am really cynical of these plans and these approaches. And I read your one in St. Louis and I'm like, oh, please don't do this.
I know. It's one of those ones that I'm immediately suspicious of it because it reads like every other silver bullet project that's proposed to us, whether that's a Rams stadium, you know, shout out to this year's Super Bowl contenders.
What, that didn't work out?
The Los Angeles Rams, I know. Or whether that's, you know, like luring a large corporation to set up a headquarters here. There's this sense that when we do just this one cool trick, you know, to quote every clickbait article in the world, everything will be fine. And I get the perception because there is a lot of the points that I find valid about the merger are things that we talked about at Strongtowns, right? That, you know, the county is broken up into all these little municipalities. They each have their own police department. They each compete with one another for economic development. More on that later. I have an asterisk on that statement. We're duplicating services and we're issuing people a whole bunch of traffic tickets to pay for these like dozens of separate police departments that, you know, have some real implications for our criminal justice system and its inequities. But at the same time, like, what would really change if we suddenly merged? Like, we would have fewer police departments. That's cool. We wouldn't have two mayors that are both on the payroll. Sure. But we would have still the same development pattern, which is not great and not like fantastic in the county. In fact, some would argue that it's worse because that's where all of our suburban experiment lies. We wouldn't have fundamentally addressed the issues, which is that we have an insolvent land pattern, both in our historic downtown core, which we have run through with highways, and in our exurban suburbs.
Let me get a little meta on us here. I think a lot of what we see right now today in terms of local government and consolidation is a response to this, is that things aren't working right. We don't have the money to fix this stuff. We don't have the money to pay our pensions. We don't have the money to keep the police officers running. We have all these parks and we can't staff them and we can't keep them maintained. it's a disaster. But we look at it, we say it's a money problem. And how do we solve this money problem? And the idea is exactly as you describe it. And I'll give you the Minnesota version. If we could just combine these two governments together, instead of having to have, you know, two snowplows, we can just have one. Instead of having two mayors, we can just have one mayor. And wouldn't that be cheaper and better and more efficient? And isn't that great? It is, in a sense, believing that the problem is one of efficiency and resources as opposed to one of productivity. What is actually happening is that our cities are experiencing the pain, which is a negative feedback. You're getting negative feedback of things not working. It's as if I'm 45 years old now and I get up in the morning and my back hurts and my legs hurt. And it's like, oh, what's the negative feedback? Well, you overexerted yourself yesterday. You can't do that the way you did 20 years ago. It's painful feedback. If I'm just going to like pop pills and ignore that and just go out and do the same thing, what I'm not doing is I'm not responding to the feedback. I'm covering up. I'm pretending that it's not there. That's what our cities are doing with consolidation. They're saying, oh, this feedback is painful. We're going to misinterpret it, not as something's not working, but as how do we get more efficient yet? And they actually do what they can to numb the pain, to take the pain away, and to basically push it down the road to some other day. We are ignoring the feedback that these systems are giving us. And I think all we end up doing is making a bigger, more painful set of feedback conditions in the future.
I feel the same way. And this gets back to my asterisk statement about economic development. So one of the main arguments that, you know, our mayor, Lyda Crewson, is making in the article that I'm going to link in the body of this post is that the city shouldn't be competing with St. Louis County. And within St. Louis County, Maplewood, which is a little municipality in there, shouldn't be competing with Brentwood. St. Louis as a region should be competing with Denver and Austin and Nashville. And I read that and I was like, why isn't that a signal to you that we aren't growing enough at home that we have to go scrambling for the same things that Denver and Nashville and Austin get, right? I mean, like, this is just, it's so weird to me that like the idea is that we have to play this national game, which is a race to the bottom. And we know it's a race to the bottom because we've seen New York City have to leverage a huge portion of its future, even though they're a magnet for talent, even though like everyone in the world wants to live in New York City who wants to also work in a white collar job for Amazon. That's the kind of feedback that I think we should like really be prompting some self-reflection, and it's not. And for me, it's like the merge or not merge is sort of like the wrong question. I think both the county and the city have a ton of work to do to make themselves stronger, and they're not doing it.
They're not doing it. And this won't help them do it either. In fact, it will bring them further down the road of not. It's really interesting, this idea of competition. And maybe we should do like a whole thing on this at some point, because we talk about, you know, we want St. Louis to compete with Nashville. And there's something in the same way that there's a group where consolidation just feels good because it's like people working together. And boy, that feels good to me. There's also another group in this country where, oh, cities competing, that feels good to me. You know, we should all be competing because competing brings out the best in us. This is very true in some sense. But the thing about competing is that there are always losers in a competition. And in the private sector, we welcome that. I'll give you the example that Nassim Taleb uses in Anti-Fragile. He talks about the restaurant industry. And he said in the restaurant industry, it's really cutthroat. Restaurants have a very short time that they're open. They have a really high failure rate. The rate of restaurants coming and going is extremely high. Yet, cities with very robust restaurant industries welcome that level of competition and failure. It actually makes everybody better. It makes everybody stronger. But what they've decided in that sense is that we will have an anti-fragile or a strong restaurant industry where people will have multiple choices in multiple different places. But we ensure that by making sure that the businesses themselves fail all the time. So the weak ones are like constantly driven out, and the ones that aren't competitive are constantly driven out, and they're constantly replaced by new entrants. Show me how we have that kind of competition in cities. Show me how or where or why we would want to drive the weak away and essentially like, you know, shun them off and have them wither and die and then, you know, bring the other ones back strong. Show me where that happens. Show me where that kind of competition takes place. It doesn't. It doesn't. That's not the way we do competition in cities. So this whole idea of we got to stop our neighborhoods from competing, and we got to stop our regional cities from competing, and we got to instead bind together in this big tribe and compete with Nashville and compete with Atlanta and compete with Charlotte. This is just silly. This is silly because it's not the paradigm that these governments operate in. It's a marketing shtick that has nothing to do with the reality of how these places run or where their strength truly comes from.
I totally agree. Let's talk about the infrastructure angle of this, since that's kind of our beat. I think my dog is excited to talk about the infrastructure angle. Sorry, he's a little weepy today. I know, poor baby. But Zozo has a lot of feelings about infrastructure. I tell you that, we're raising him right. In any case, I've heard the argument from lots of folks that all the money's in the county. That's where all of the really high earners are living. And when you go out there, they have really well-paved streets. I like riding my bike out in the county a lot better. They have a nicer park system, all that kind of good stuff. And then you get into the city and we're covered in potholes. Wouldn't a merger just mean that we would be able to distribute our infrastructure services and our maintenance obligations a little bit better? Help me answer that person. I'm curious how you would phrase your response.
Here's what I would say. The people living out in the edge are not stupid. And the people who are kind of representing them in these things are also not stupid. They're not going to give you their money. They're not merging with you because they're suddenly become benevolent and want to transfer all this money to you. Those places are financially unproductive. They are, in a sense, a pyramid scheme of funding. And what happens in all of these places is that they have one generation where everything is brand new and paid for. And then the next generation, they start to take on debt to make ends meet. And the third generation, the stuff starts to fall apart. They are now past that, what we call the illusion of wealth phase. And they're looking at it saying, our long-term budget situation doesn't make a lot of sense. They're not doing this for you in the center city. Their nice roads are like the marketing brochure. The center city is where the productivity is. It's where the money is at. It's where you actually have more wealth being generated than you have costs. The people out there can do the math, and they're maybe doing the math better than you. And they're saying, we're a sinking ship. We got to tie our boat to this other one if we're going to stay afloat. When we look at the Twin Cities metropolitan area, for years and years and years, part of this grand bargain they made, suburbs sent money into the central cities. I remember in grad school looking at this going, that's not going to continue very long. And in fact, the last couple of reports I've seen, you've got the exact opposite now. Minneapolis and St. Paul are actually subsidizing the suburbs around them in this wealth transfer that was made by, I'll say this in a pejorative way, these bleeding hearts that looked at all the rich people out on the edge and said, why are they getting such a break? Let's soak them. And the mechanism that's set up now is going the opposite. We're taking money from the poor neighborhoods and we're sending it out to the edge. That's exactly what's going to happen here. And this is one of the tragedies of the North American development pattern. This is one of the tragedies that we're going to have to work through over the next generation. And that is the people with power and influence live in the most unproductive, the financially unproductive places. And for them to continue their lifestyle, they're going to have to find ways to tap into the productivity of places that they've long held disdain for. If we allow that to continue, we're basically just going to mine what little wealth there is left in our cities and throw it away, propping up this crazy lifestyle.
Amen. I just want to applaud, but it would probably not sound good on the audio track. it's really challenging for me to explain to someone who doesn't speak strong towns and doesn't yet speak strong towns because I make it my mission to teach someone that language as often as I can. Why me sitting in my brick house that was built around about 1890 and living on a property that's generating more wealth for my region than someone who lives in a mansion way out on the edge of town, like Nelly, for instance, you know what I mean? Out in the suburbs. And it's just this visibility problem that's really, really hard to square. But I think when people get it, it becomes one of those like, oh no, kind of things. The stuff in the county was built in like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. Like people are looking at their watches and saying, it's time to replace all of this stuff. Maybe they have a few main arterials that are getting a lot of state funding and things like that, but they're actually not doing as hot as even the people who live there might think. And that's really fascinating and probably an easier way for me to convince people to against this merger, which I really struggle with, frankly, than just saying, oh, a conservative billionaire is for it. Because that's like the only progressive argument I hear in St. Louis. And I think there's so many better arguments, honestly.
I had this insight that for me was profound. It might not be profound for you. I was reading this book, and I can't remember the name of the book, but it was about, we had talked about it here before. It was about basically post-Civil War America through Reconstruction and then up until like World War I. And it focused on Jim Crow era laws and essentially what happened to freed slaves. And towards the end of this book, it talked about how the narrative of, and I'm going to say this in the way that they said it in the book, this narrative of lack of achievement being tied to a lack of like capacity. Basically, these freed slaves were lesser people, lesser intelligence, and that's why they failed to achieve. The book went through and like destroyed that narrative. But the thing that was profound to me is that the descendants of the freed slaves, they quoted time and time and time again, essentially believing this narrative themselves. You look around and like the evidence that you see points to this, like we're here. Why aren't we achieving? Why aren't we this? And because of where they were at in their lives, they looked around and said, you know, there must be some truth to this narrative, which is almost like a tragedy wrapped in a tragedy, right? Like you have this bad thing happen and then you start to believe the worst that's being said. When I look at like your neighborhood that you live in, I think if we went around there and talked to people and we talked to them and said, do you know that your neighborhood is actually producing more wealth at less cost than that rich neighborhood out on the edge or that strip mall out on the edge or that drive-through franchise restaurant out there, then they would say, no, there's no way. That's not possible. And it's almost because culturally we've become, I don't want to say brainwashed, but just like attuned to not believe that. Like that can't be possible. There is no way that is. And we almost have accepted in this tragedy of a tragedy that our position in life is lesser. And that's what I think is in many ways so disturbing and backwards about this. You can get the billionaire saying, well, I'm for this. And then all of a sudden the progressives line up and say, well, yes, this must be great because, you know, this benevolent person is lowering themselves. No, it's not. It's the exact opposite. We have conditioned ourselves to believe that these old and blighted and rundown neighborhoods are financial basket cases. And in the most part, it's the exact opposite.
Right. And our mayor thinks this. Our mayor is on record saying, like, if you define success as beating someone else, no matter whether the game is really stupid and really making you broke, then yeah, you're going to think you're a failure if you're losing. You know, like we said no to a stadium, a soccer stadium in St. Louis, and half of the town was thrilled. No, thank God. The other half of the town said, like, we lost this stadium. We could have been winners. We could have been the home of a soccer franchise, which like in Missouri is like, oh dear. Like, do you think we're in Spain? No, we are not in Spain. But it's just a fascinating issue. And I was hoping that by bringing up my hometown and what's personal to me and getting your take on it, we could talk a little bit more generally about, or at least shine a light, as I think we've already done, on how other cities approach these problems, that no matter what way you slice your city into bits or you annex it or you merge it, the fundamental economic systems that you're working with have to work is what it comes down to. You have to build strong towns. You have to take the town that you already have and make it stronger. And the town could have a million people in it or 300,000 people in it. You know, that would be the size that we would grow to is a million, like 1.3 million if we annexed with the county. But until we fix the fundamentals, nothing's ever going to get fixed. We're never going to be a prosperous place.
Right. This is not an efficiency problem. It's a productivity problem. If you look at it as an efficiency problem, you're only going to be making things worse. We're going in the wrong direction, but now we're going in the wrong direction more efficiently. It's not very helpful.
Well, now that I'm feeling heartwarmed that someone out there understands the way that I see this, because I've had a lot of frustrating conversations with folks about it. Let's go to the down zone. I want to talk about, I'll kick it off this week because I think there's a good segue. I'm reading a book right now called The Divided City by Alan Mulock that I think probably if you have been reading Strong Towns for a long, long time, it will be a quite familiar book to you. But if you're a brand new reader, this might be one to dip your toe into. It takes on the problem of how cities like St. Louis and Cleveland and Buffalo and Baltimore, all of these post-industrial cities in the Midwest and on the East Coast, have quote unquote seen a revival. And this book sort of digs into why that revival actually isn't all it's cracked up to be, why it is sort of targeted at individual neighborhoods that have been heavily, heavily subsidized, that are probably not as long for this world as we would all like, and made the whole system more fragile. And I appreciated it because it is a book that is focused on the places where I've spent my whole life. I grew up in Cleveland. I live in St. Louis. My partner's from Baltimore. Like, this is a me book. But I also appreciated the way that it gave a very like brass tacks basic history of how we got to this point. And if you're a new entry into the urbanist conversation, I think you might dig it. Alan Mulock, Divided City. What have you been reading lately, Chuck, or listening to or watching?
I've been trying to do escapism just because I'm so deep in this couple of projects that I'm working on that, like, when I come up for air, I can't like let my brain get latched on to something else. So of all the silly things, I've never been one to delve into the kind of alternate Star Wars universe. There's like the regular Star Wars stuff. And then there's all these like other like side books that people have written. And I've never gone there. Like, I've never done that, even though I always loved the Star Wars stuff. Someone recommended to me this one book, and I decided to get it on audiobook. And so as I've been out snow blowing and, you know, starting cars and doing all this, I've been listening to this kind of Star Wars fantasy book. I don't even know the name of it. And it's actually, it's called Catalyst. It's supposed to have happened before like the movie Rogue One came out. It's like a prequel for Rogue One, which is like a prequel for
Rogue Zero. A New Hope.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of fun. So I have a question for you before we finish the down zone. I know like Americans now outside of the Northeast are kind of programmed to not like the New England Patriots. And I will say, I'm not one of those people. I actually admire the Patriots for many reasons.
Ooh,
I do.
But you know how I feel.
Okay. Well, my daughter said, "Dad, who do you want to win the Super Bowl?" And I had to explain, like, I cannot, in good conscience, cheer for the Los Angeles Rams. Like, I can't. Not after, maybe after a decade goes by, like, I find myself not disliking the Baltimore Ravens as much as I used to, although I still do, you know. Props to you from Cleveland.
Okay. I know. I live with a Ravens fan. That's another painful part of my life. Yeah.
So I have too much respect for St. Louis to cheer for the Los Angeles Rams. And so I'm cheering for the Patriots. And I just wondered, as someone who's there, what your vibe is.
Oh, the vibe is just like, we're not even watching football this year. I was reading an article today about, there's a local, like, St. Louis is big on pretzels. It's our Germanic roots. And there's like a local pretzel company that is selling a pretzel platter that spells out the words Kroenke sucks. Kroenke is the guy who sold the St. Louis Rams to, and like, in pretzel, so you can eat it at your Super Bowl party. And like, that's kind of the wavelength I think most people are on. Like, no one likes the Patriots in anywhere, I would say, like, west of Pittsburgh, maybe. You know, Pittsburgh might even be too far west. So it's a tough one this year. I kind of gave up on football when the Browns went to Baltimore. So third grade, I would say. It's been a while since I've been invested in a football team. I'll cheer for the Ravens sometimes just to like keep my relationship intact, but that's about it. It's all like,
so you will not be watching the game on Sunday?
We are having an urbanism book club / Super Bowl party. We're going to be watching it on mute while talking about a book. So okay. Yeah, that's okay. The kind of crowd I run with. So now you know, wow, what a deep nerd I am. No, we usually actually throw a Super Bowl party every year. I'm into the food of the Super Bowl, I will say, pretty strongly. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll hook myself up with one of those Kroenke sex pretzel platters.
There you go.
Well, thanks so much, everybody, for listening to Upzoned. If you want to help us get the show into more ears, you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really does help. Or if you want to get the Strong Towns message into more eyes and ears and hearts, how about that? You can join the movement at strongtowns.org/membership. Thanks so much, and keep doing what you can to build a strong town.